We welcome you back in to Bullseye on the afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Rolling right along here into Thursday, Andy Bulbarch, Rocco Nushi with you. And it's time for us to take our weekly trip to Planet Golf as we welcome in Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. Guy, it is always a pleasure to have you on. How are you today?
Doing great, Bull. I hope you and your listeners are doing awesome. And before we get rolling, I'm going to do something that will probably make you cringe, but I want to say hi to my mom. She lives in Avon Lake, and she's a big fan.
Oh, nice. Well, that's awesome. Glad she's able to tune in and take the trip with us to Planet Golf on a weekly basis. Great, great stuff. Well, let's get into what happened at the Memorial this past weekend. That was a lot of fun to watch. In the final hours on Sunday, and I know some people may look at the results and think, wait a minute, it got a little testy there down the stretch, especially with the weather wreaking a little bit of havoc, and you could certainly sense the frustration on John Rahm. But, boy, the Memorial, I thought, really had a lot of interesting things going for it. It made for some compelling television with the course conditions, the rules situation that kind of snuck in there at the end, and, of course, you know, Jack Nicklaus being a big, big part of this, also announcing that he and his wife had the COVID-19 virus back in March.
Where do you even want to begin with this one? Because a lot went on, and there were a lot of questions about what the memorial would look and feel like. It was supposed to have spectators that got nixed pretty late in the process. In fact, if you watched it on TV, you could see that some of the infrastructure for fans were up in terms of hospitality tents and concession stands and some of those things. And there were some questions, you know, how would this tournament play compared to the Workday Charity Open that was played a week earlier on the exact same golf course. But wow, it was great theater last week. I mean, it really wasn't that suspenseful of an ending. I mean, John Rahm was in control of the tournament since Saturday afternoon, but there was some drama. There certainly was, and there was actually a lot of drama. If you think about it, there was the rule situation involving John Rahm on number 16, where his ball oscillated, and it was, you know, that was told to him there. I don't even think he knew about it until Amanda Baliones was interviewing him in the post-round interview, and he had to sign for a different score than what he thought he had, or he would have been disqualified, so he took the two-shot penalty. And there was also a situation, I don't know how many people picked up on this on Saturday, but on the 16th hole, Tony Finau's ball sort of did the same thing too, and that was pretty noticeable on TV and got some social media buzz, but that was not turned into a violation like John Rahm's was. I mean, with the big money that's involved in these tournaments, and especially on the gambling side, and how good these high-definition TVs are and these camera angles that CBS and Golf Channel and NBC get, you're going to see these type of things. But the right thing was done. You know, the ball oscillated when John Rahm was right next to it, and, you know, fortunately it did not affect the outcome of a golf tournament that was a great golf tournament. It had a spectacular field. You had so many different things going on. You had the return of Tiger Woods. You had a golf course that was playing U.S. Open tough for a regular PGA Tour Invitational type event. Oh, and then, by the way, you know, Jack Nicklaus announces randomly on the broadcast or out of nowhere that he had tested positive for COVID-19, and him and his wife were sheltered in place in North Palm Beach for 6 weeks in the early spring. And at the end of it, you had a new number one in the world and only the second Spaniard ever to ascend to that position. So, yeah, crazy week, Bull. What stood out in your mind? There's so much.
Well, to me, watching the back nine, you know, and they made the comment on the broadcast when John Rahm slammed his driver, and I thought, wait a minute, you could see that maybe, just maybe, what was once an 8-stroke lead could diminish pretty quickly, and things got really interesting down the stretch. And I thought it was also fascinating, too, that after he chipped in, and as it turns out, we thought he was chipping in for birdie, he ends up chipping in for bogey. With the rule situation creeping in, I thought it was interesting, Guy, that he didn't even know that he was chipping in for bogey at the time until he was doing the post-match interview. That stood out to me, the fact that Rahm almost kind of felt that slipping away on the back nine, and that's not necessarily something you see from a guy with an 8-stroke lead.
No, and there are a few things going on. That golf course was playing extremely tough, and even though I said that the ending lacked some suspense, anything was possible on that golf course, from birdies all the way to, you know, 8s, 9s, 10s. I mean, the wind was blowing. The greens were very firm because the Muirfield Village right now, as we speak, is going under a renovation. So that was the last day with those greens in any sort of playing condition, and that made it fun and interesting, and the fairways had dried out, and it didn't really rain like it usually does during the Memorial. So like I said, you really had a U.S. Open, and the rough was high, and you really had a U.S. Open-like golf course, so you never really felt like any lead was exactly safe. But, I mean, how big was the chip on number 16 for Rahm, looking back on it, with the two-shot penalty, too? You know, if he doesn't get that up and down and has the two-shot penalty, that's only a one-stroke victory. So that shot, you can make the argument that that shot was even, it was even bigger for him to make that for bogey than it was to make it for birdie, because if he doesn't make that for bogey, he's looking at a five or a six on that hole. The problem with the rule situation is that could have been communicated a little bit better to John Rahm. It was pretty obvious when you saw it on TV that the ball oscillated and there was going to be a situation, and that was on the 16th hole, so there were still two full holes to play. And that's really where, when these situations happen, the cameras pick up things that maybe the players aren't necessarily well aware of, that the communication needs to be better than him finding out in the post-round interview live on CBS. I mean, how awkward was that? I really think that when it happens on a hole like the 16th, at least by the 18th tee shot, a rules official from the PGA Tour or whatever governing body is putting on the tournament should inform the player of what happened and what the situation is, because that really affects strategy and how those holes are played thereafter. So that was my big problem with it, is that we knew instantly that something happened, but John Rahm was like one of the last people in the golf world to know.
Well, he survives that. And now, of
fortunately,
course,
right?
Sure, fortunately. And yeah, now he's the world number one. And it's amazing the difference one tournament can make for you. Now he's kind of standing on top of the golf world, but what are the chances he's able to stay there for the next few weeks?
He's not a mega name in the casual sports world yet, but those of us that really are hardcore golf fans and follow it are not surprised by this. I mean, he turned pro in 2016, and there was a tremendous amount of hype surrounding him because he was a dominant player at Arizona State. I mean, how about this? He turns pro in 2016, and Tim Mickelson, Phil Mickelson's brother, was the head golf coach at Arizona State. He leaves his job as the coach at Arizona State, a Pac-12 university that is a power in college golf, to go caddy for John Rahm. So what does that tell you about what his stock was in the golf world and the potential that he had? And then, of course, Tim Mickelson now is caddying for his brother Phil. But this is a player that you look at, and he really has won some big tournaments, but not anything really huge domestically until the Memorial last weekend. And I would call that a huge win, because you looked at the quality of the field and the world ranking points that were involved. But he's had 10 worldwide wins since turning pro in 2016. He's still only 25 years old. And get this, Bull, in the last 2 years, he's played in 35 events, and he's been in the top 10 22 times. So if you're wondering for a template to get to world number one, there it is. Play good in a lot of events over the course of a year and a half or 2 years, and win a few big ones in there. He won the DP World Challenge on the European Tour at the end of last year, which is a big tournament, and you're going to get the world number one. And as far as his staying power, I mean, this was one of the best college golfers in the last 20 years, and it's going to be tough for him to stay there because there's so many people close to that number one, like Rory McIlroy's right behind him, and Justin Thomas, and you look down, and even Dustin Johnson's a big winner tour away, and so is Brooks Koepka, of reclaiming that spot. There's been a lot of shuffling of it, really, you know, since Tiger's dominant run ended, and it's bounced between a lot of players. But John Rahm is not a golfer of the moment. This is someone that's going to be around for a long time. It's someone that was around for a considerable amount of time in the amateur ranks. It's somebody that had a fast start to his professional career. And now, really, there's only one thing lacking from his resume, and that's a major championship. And he's already contending in some of them. I mean, this is a very, very good player, and somebody that I'm not going to say he's going to stick around that spot for every week for the next 5 years, but it wouldn't surprise me if he does have a long reign as the world number one. Maybe not this time. Maybe he gets bounced from it this time. But he's probably gonna get back to it a few times throughout the course of his career. And maybe you look at all the good young players. You know, Rory McIlroy's 31, and you look at all the players from 31 on down, and he has as good of a chance as any of them to stay at world number one for a long period of time, I think.
Guys,
there's no weakness in his game.
True.
Besides his emotions, and he's getting a better job of controlling those.
Guy Cipriano, editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine, is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. I'm glad you brought up Rory McIlroy, because it was mentioned on Sunday that it seems like the one guy who's really kind of been affected most by not playing in front of fans is Rory McIlroy. And some think that his mojo has really kind of been affected as a result. Seemed like it was the fifth hole on Sunday that really gave him some serious problems. He was never able to kind of recover from that. Do you think that he's been affected in some way without fans?
It's tough to say, because he played in four events before the stoppage, and he was in the top five of all four of those events. Of course, you come back with the restart with the Charles Schwab Challenge, and he's number one in the world. And I'm looking at his performances right now. He's made the cut in all four of them, but he really hasn't been a back nine Sunday factor since the restart. And the expectations for Rory McIlroy have always been high since he won his first major championship in 2011. I believe. I mean, how incredible is that? He's only 31 years old, and he's 9 years removed from his first major championship, the U.S. Open, that was at Congressional. I don't know. It's tough to say. I think it's an adjustment for a lot of players. I mean, Rory McIlroy, since really 2011, has been playing in front of huge galleries every time he's teed it up, and I'm sure there's an adjustment there. With him, though, I think it's more about avoiding the big numbers. You watch him play, and he's going on along nicely, and he's got birdie putt after birdie putt inside 20 feet, and then he makes a double bogey, or he makes a triple bogey, and for him, it's just avoiding that bad number and that bad round, and he puts himself in some tough positions because he's playing catch-up sometimes, and I still think he's going to be a major factor here as we move into August. We're 2 weeks away from the PGA Championship at TPC Harding Park. He won the WGC match play title there a few years ago. So I wouldn't quite say that he's not going to be a factor here in these no spectator tournaments. He maybe is a player that's more effective because he's beloved by the galleries. I mean, you can't really find anyone in the golf world to say a negative thing about Rory McIlroy. He is such a exciting player to watch. He plays fast. He plays aggressive. He's very good with the media. He's candid. He's not one of those programmed pro athletes. He's genuine. He's authentic. He treats people well and with respect. So he's such a beloved player. And maybe you know, we talked a few weeks ago about some of the guys that get heckled a lot, like your Patrick Reeds and your Bubba Watsons and your Matt Kuchers now. But this is a player that's beloved, and I would say it's too early to tell if not having a gallery or fans are having an impact on him. But he's so good that he'll figure out how to play regardless of what the situation is. And I think he's just a little bit slow to get going here on this restart because of the big numbers he's had week after week in some tournaments.
Well, another guy I want to discuss before we get into the TV ratings and the participation numbers, which seem to be way, way up this year. Wait, what's going on with Brooks Koepka right now? And this week, I know you feel like this is a very, very important tournament to him. What's going on with Brooks Koepka?
Yeah, here we are, the 3M Open. This is probably it's definitely the weakest field since the PGA Tour's restart in mid-June. It's an event that's in a tough spot on the schedule because you have the Memorial tournament last week, and then next week you go to a WGC event in Memphis, and then the week after that you have the PGA Championship. And Brooks Koepka had some medical issues coming into the year. I mean, he didn't play the last 3 months of last year because he had stem cell treatment on his left knee, and he's admitted that it's bothered him at times, but he's trying to play through it, and he's trying to play through it because he needs to start turning it up. He's 154th in the FedEx Cup standings. I mean, wow, that's pretty amazing when you think about the quality of player that he is, having four major championships and being number one in the world not that long ago. You know, if the playoffs started today, he wouldn't be in them. Only 125 go. Of course, he's got this week, and then the WGC event in Memphis where he's the defending champ, and then the PGA Championship where he's the defending champ, and then there's a tournament in Greensboro, the Wyndham Championships, and then we're right into the PGA Tour playoffs. So this is a huge week for him to get some confidence, to put some low numbers up. I mean, he hasn't been atrocious since the restart, but he struggled, and he hasn't really showed any dominant form here. Really, he hasn't really been a huge factor since the U.S. Open last year, where he came second to Gary Woodland. But this is he's a very unique player. I mean, he has 7 PGA Tour wins. 4 of them are majors. Another one is a World Golf Championship event. And you think that he can turn it up at any time, but I really think with him playing this week after playing the Memorial last week and the Workday the week before, he's been playing a lot lately. He's been one of the more, he's played 5 of the 7 events since the restart. This is somebody who's looking for something, and with it maybe being a weaker field this week, maybe this is a chance for him to put some low numbers up and maybe get a top 10 and get some confidence going into 2 tournaments where he's the defending champion.
Well, it's been a lot of fun to watch since they started things back up again. And for a while there, golf was definitely king on the weekends. And seems like it's going to stay that way for a little bit with some of these very strong TV ratings. Golf has picked up a lot of momentum, and it seems like the participation numbers are also way, way up so far this year.
Yeah, so when the COVID-19 shutdowns happened, of course, the PGA Tour cancels the Players' Championship after one round and then goes away for basically 3 months. And then on the local level, 44% of the United States golf supply was open at one point. So 56% of the courses had closed after COVID-19 outbreaks. And then that you know, within 2 months, that number was up to about 98% of the golf courses in the United States were open. And March and April took some participation hits just because of the number of course closures in states. We were fortunate in Ohio. Golf courses were never told to shut down in Ohio, so Ohio kept playing on. And then in the month of May, nationwide, there were close to 8% more rounds played nationwide in May this year compared to last year, and that was still with some states closed, and the June numbers have not been released. But, you know, anecdotally, anyone that plays golf here in Northeast Ohio will tell you that the courses that they play at are more crowded this year compared to last year, and that's a product of a lot of things. I think it's a big product of people working from home and being able to sneak out and get 9 in or get 18 in without the boss knowing or without productivity being lost. It's, you know, youth sports weren't going on really until a few weeks ago, so people weren't as busy shuttling their kids all over the place, and maybe that's more time to take the son or daughter out to the golf course and have them ride around or play with the father or mother. There's also been no really pro sports on at night, no Indians games or no NBA playoffs, that type of thing. So a lot of things have worked in golf's favor, beginning with the fact that it was one of the few places where you could spend discretionary money that was open in the spring, and that's translated to the TV level. The PGA Tour got back before a lot of other sports, and just last Sunday night during that final hour of the Memorial Bowl, 5.25 million people watched the last hour of the Memorial on CBS, and that was the highest rated, not just sports program, but television program last Sunday. By comparison, 60 Minutes, which ran after the Memorial, a nationally known news show that's been known to attract big audiences, only had 3.73 million viewers. So 1.5 million more people watched the Memorial Tournament, a regular season PGA Tour event, than, you know, one of the highest rated TV news programs. I don't know if that says something about golf's popularity or just people want to stay away from the news. I don't know what that says, but it just, I think on golf's end, that's very encouraging. And then over a million people watched the Thursday coverage on Golf Channel, which was the most for the first round of the Memorial since 1997. Of course, that was Tiger Woods' first round back since the restart. And then overall, you look at it, and CBS's ratings since the restart in June are up 28% compared to comparable events in 2019. But then on the Golf Channel, their TV ratings are up 61% since the restart with comparable events from last year. So a lot of things are working in golf's favor, and also on the participation end. I mean, the weather, it's been hot and sultry, right? But we haven't had a lot of days in June and July where you just couldn't get out and play golf because of rain or horrendous weather here in the Midwest, and that's been like that in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic. So golf, it might be the sport for the times, Bull. Of course, I work in the golf industry. I know a lot of people in the golf industry. I know what golf means to people and what it means to economies and how passionate people are about the game and how great the game is, not only to watch but to play and be involved with. And just maybe it's one of the few things that has seen a surge because of some of the things that were taken away from people because of COVID-19 shutdowns.
Well, certainly great signs for the sport. No doubt about that. Hopefully it can maintain that momentum as we push through the summer and get into the fall as well. Guy, we always appreciate the time, my friend. Always love catching up and taking that weekly trip to Planet Golf. And we look forward to doing this again next week.
Yep, thanks, Bull. I hope everybody enjoys watching the golf and playing the golf this weekend. And next week we'll have a pretty big tournament to talk about in Memphis.
Yes, we will. No doubt about that. Guy, thank you again. That's Guy Cipriano, editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Let's take a break. Rocco and I will come back here in just a few on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.